Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Thank you, Minute Girls, for your candid enthusiasm.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 2, Homecoming. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara.
Hi.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Season 3 and what I suspect is the second episode of Dawson's Creek with the same name, Homecoming. But first, before we get into said episode, a note about upcoming episodes on Again With This, our sister podcast on the Patreon, episode 222, dropping January 3rd, a very crimey new year to us all. We will be watching Heather Locklear in Mormon Mom Gone Wrong, The Ruby Frank Story. And it's a good thing we have a subtitle, because that could be a whole channel of Lifetime movies, I feel. It is at play.mylifetime.com. We will link it in the show notes, but you should join us on the Patreon. We have a huge library of back episodes, and we would love to have you along on our Discord to discuss them. Again, with thispodcast.com/club to find out more.
Indeed. I did just check. I think there's another episode that takes place at Homecoming, but it's not called Homecoming.
Okay.
They did recycle it again this time. But speaking of homecomings, there are different kinds in this episode. Let's begin with our B plot. Andy and Pacey's reunion doesn't go as he had hoped. We open this one on Pacey and Dawson walking into school, the former telling the latter he feels like he's going to explode, and he might, like a guy in Norway spontaneously did last year. And as the shot widens out to show Dawson, we see his hair is awful in a whole new way. It's like plastered down like he's a 5-year-old going for picture day. I think it must just like rained on them a bunch in this episode, because there's a lot of shots where clearly there were not PAs to walk them to set with umbrellas.
Yeah.
It's a rough one.
Mm-hmm.
Dawson and his dumb hair say nervous anticipation doesn't cause spontaneous combustion. Pacey denies that he is nervous, and then we get this, clip 2.
It's nervous that you're nervous.
Whoops! No take 2 on that?
Wow. I mean, it's season 3.
Yeah.
Give him another take. I mean, I know it's him, but give him another take and a blow dryer. God.
Yeah. Why did you keep going? Like, just stop so they can't use this. Anyway, he does keep going, expositing that they're only 6 hours away from Pacey seeing Andy for the first time in, I guess, months, because I guess he never visited her in Providence at any point over the summer. I know we're about to find out she was in a residential facility, but they didn't allow guests at all. Whatever. They establish that Sheriff Witter's letting Pacey go pick Andy up. And then we go over to Graham's house, where she is in the sun porch serving tea to Joseph and saying that by comparison to Jen, Jack was a regular St. Francis. Jack is also there to ask expository questions about Andy's arrival time. Graham's asks if Andy has made a full recovery, which is probably not the way an RN would phrase a question about someone with a mental illness that will probably have to be managed for the rest of her life. And that's basically what Joseph says.
Yeah. Okay.
Grams says that Joseph has given Andy a great chance by moving his business to Capeside for her sake. So good job, Jack, on suggesting that. He finally fucking listened to you. Speaking of Andy, then we're at her hospital, joining Pacey in the middle of an argument with the receptionist about letting Andy leave a day earlier than scheduled as a surprise. The receptionist says surprises are something they try to avoid, which, sure. And then outside, Pacey reports to Joey, clip 3.
Well, the clinic doesn't allow visitors after hours. Subsequently, I can't talk to Andy, and subsequently, I can't get her permission to take her home.
consequently, not subsequently, is what you mean, actually.
Yeah. There. Also, what kind of residential mental health facility is pinning everything on the minor child patient's permission, which she grants to a guest who shows up? Like, this is just bad. This is dumb.
Yeah. Also, I don't know about after hours because it's bright daylight outside. Like, when do they end? Like 3:30?
There is a sign that says 9 to 3.
Oh, all right, fine.
For what that's worth.
Joey silently holds her hand out for Pacey to help her down and then goes into the hospital to create a diversion by claiming she needs medical care immediately. Clip 4.
This is a moral injustice. I have psychiatric concerns.
Well, obviously.
Fucking A, front desk lady. Bucking for MVP, are ya? I like the chances.
Yeah, this is one of many jokes in this episode of people being real flippant about the, like, you're acting crazy sort of a thing, which, I mean, I guess it's sort of like psychiatric gallows humor, but it does go on a little much for me.
Agree.
Joey hops up on the desk and states that someone has to listen to her problems and then drops one arm to signal to Pacey, who then belly crawls past her. And he makes it up to the second floor of what I think might be the same house they used as the McPhee residence last season, or just another nice house.
Mm-hmm.
When he gets to Andy's room, she is sitting on the bed with a boy chatting. Her hair is blonde again, and between the baby bangs and the braids and the Sesame Street Ernie Core striped t-shirt under overalls, I'm guessing they got a note over the summer that Meredith Monroe was looking too much older than Pacey and they better junior her up, but that just only makes her look even older, like trying to look young.
Oh, yeah.
It's rough.
Yeah. It's not so bad here, although the Rocky Top barbershop baby bangs are very bad. But yeah, a future hairstyle, and don't forget, you could see all of those in the visual aids, but a hairstyle later in this episode is like, what kind of baby Jane ass shit are we trying with this?
Yeah, it's real unacceptable, I'm gonna say. Did not care for it.
Yeah.
So Pacey knocks and Andy is surprised and chirpy, but also kind of stiff when he picks her up and spins her around. She awkwardly introduces the kid that she was talking to as Mark and says that she was expecting her dad tomorrow. Pacey, deflating, starts to say he wanted to surprise her, but then he trails off. And Clip 5.
It's dinner time for me.
Bye, Mark.
We'll talk soon, I hope.
We will.
Andy.
Oh, Joey!
You came too!
And if we don't leave soon, they're going to make me stay.
That's an example of what I'm referring to. Guys, good taste. Let's stay on the right line, maybe.
Yeah.
So as Andy goes to pack, Pacey and Joey are left loitering uncomfortably. And later, all three are carrying Andy's stuff out when Pacey casually asks what Mark is in for. Andy tensely says that's private. Pacey presses her and she asks not to talk about him, please. Pacey just thinks it's a little odd that they seem so close when Andy never mentioned him in any of her letters or emails. Joey leans forward to tell Pacey to drop the male jealousy, and Pacey snaps that it's a long walk home. And then Andy switches to being amused that Pacey's jealous, and he readily admits he is jealous of a guy who got to see her every day. Andy and her wildly 1999 translucent green watch smile that they're together now, and they kiss while Joey celebrates and encourages them to get moving. And wow, did that watch take me right back to the colored iMac era and when every other consumer product was doing that.
Yep. Yeah.
What a time. God. So then as everyone puts on their seatbelts and Pacey tells them to put in their radio station requests because it's the past, Andy mopes. Pacey checks that she's okay, and she claims she's just happy to be with Pacey and going home. He does not look convinced and is right, because when the camera cuts back to Andy, she is crying. And speaking of the radio station, Joey picks alternative. Pacey overrules her with classic rock. What we hear is the only song in the episode that has not been replaced. Something by the Nines, not classic rock. And I refuse to believe Joey's not also a classic rock or top 40 girly. Sorry.
Yeah, same.
The next day, Andy's first day back at school, Pacey wants to take her to a movie. Andy was thinking they could all have dinner as a group. Jack told Jen he would go to the pep rally, which we'll get to, and Andy immediately tries to glom onto that plan, so Pacey reminds her they don't have Spirit. Andy says there's plenty of time for them to be alone, which is exactly what someone in Pacey's situation would want to hear and is not suspicious at all. But she says she just wants to be around normal people for a while, and he finally asks if she's trying to avoid being alone with him. She says they can be alone after or tomorrow, and then leaves before he can interrogate her more. And from this point, they cross into the A-plot, so we will see them there. And the A-plot, if you can fucking believe it, is, are you ready for some football? I'm not, but it's happening to me anyway. I really had forgotten how much football there is this season, truly.
Yeah, I mean, I remembered that. I remembered Henry and the footballiness of that aspect of it.
Yep.
And I sort of self-soothed about this plot line by looking up rumors about why Michael Pitt kept getting fired from shit over the years, and that helped a little to confirm that I was not crazy and that he may have been fired from this for being late and high. But yeah, it's still a lot of football. Cliff was right there.
Yes, thank you.
I mean, I know he's not here anymore, but
no,
Cliff. No.
He's in a better place, like I said, New York.
Yeah, sure is.
On their way into school, we learn that Pacey and Joey have been hanging out since the debacle of the season premiere. Dawson is obnoxiously magnanimous about it. Clipsix.
Please, nobody walked into the Potter Wizard detente more than me.
Glad she has somebody. The only help is Joey and I weave our separate ways through these pathless woods we call life. Hey, speaking of wood, Dawson, whatever happened with a certain bus girl?
Oh, God. Didn't ask. She vanished. Disappeared. Jonathan Krakauer'd in thin air.
You let her get away?
I had a slightly irate father to answer to, basically. But I'm lucky I got away with my life, you know.
So what's happened since?
With you? I haven't been able to find her.
Did you take down a strip joint?
Embarrassingly, yes. She doesn't even work there anymore. Turns out she was a temp.
Strip joints have temps?
I mean, I don't think they call them that, but they probably have a lot of employees who pass through for a short period of time.
Yeah. Also, slightly irate is not a thing.
Yeah. That's true.
And don't say detente.
No. Also, don't make him say Potter Witter detente. That's a mouthful for anyone. And he has problems, yeah, as really. We already heard earlier in the scene with the Pacey. It's natural that you're nervous.
Yeah.
Inside, Dawson adds that he only knows Eve's first name, and even that could be fake. Pacey says that's too bad, since she was the ultimate transitional woman. Dawson wouldn't get emotionally involved with her after what he just went through with Joey, but, and I'm paraphrasing, she would probably fuck him, so if Dawson ever finds her again, he should not let her out of his sight. Pacey monologues about this so intensely that when an arm reaches out and yanks Dawson into a doorway, Pacey does not even notice. And of course, that turns out to be Eve kissing Dawson in a janitor's closet. And the insanity that a show with this many women and gay men on the writing staff could come up with such a one-dimensional straight guy fantasy is truly boggles the mind. I really am confused about it.
Both in the execution and that they would think that we would want to watch it.
Right.
Like, we don't. She is extremely tiresome and even more non-credible. So, like, what was the plan here?
Yeah. When she comes up for air from kissing him, clip 7.
Morning, Dawson. Welcome to school.
Nope. This did not happen.
No. And again, if you don't have anything interesting for the characters to say, they don't have to say anything. Just keep it pushing.
Mm-hmm.
After the credits, and I forgot to say this in the last episode, but there's Kerr Smith and Meredith Monroe have made it in, so you can see new GIFs and new shots from all of those in the episode 1 visual aids if you didn't already look. Back to this episode, they take another break from making out so Eve can say she's there to jump out of a cake for a history teacher, then admit she's, like, a student. Dawson doesn't believe it. Clip 8.
What's the matter, Dawson? Never seen a senior girl up close before.
Senior citizen? Not to be rude, but
also,
come on.
He's like 28, so who are you talking to? Ugh. So dumb.
None of the seniors Dawson has seen look like Eve, but at her warning, he doesn't try to guess her age. She thought he would be more excited to see her. He says he is, but that her sudden appearances have been followed by sudden disappearances. And he recaps her various guises from the premiere, but she says none of those is her. Clip 9.
I'm just a girl standing in a janitor's closet asking you to kiss her.
I'm so tired. Sarah, I'm so tired of her. She's so boring.
Want her to fall into the sea.
Yeah. Then the bell rings. She takes off for class. Dawson tries to get her last name, but she's already gone. And in the hall, he runs straight into Mitch and Principal Green, who take forever to say they want Dawson to do something on behalf of the football team for the pep rally tomorrow, but not what. And then we're at Graham's house. Jack tells Joseph he would rather wait till the weekend to move his stuff back into the house. Well, Joseph thought maybe Jack should stay at Graham's, actually, because he doesn't want to disturb a situation that works for Jack. Jack snits that it's more like Joseph has a situation that works for himself. And Joseph has maybe also had therapy. Clip 10.
The changes that you're going to make in your life now, changes you have every right to make, would be too difficult with me around.
Why can't you just admit that you're afraid? You can't deal with having a gay son and having me around would mean doing just that.
Must you assume that every decision that I make is based upon my lack of character?
No, just the ones that concern me. Well, since this is still my home, I suggest you leave.
Still my home.
All right.
Concha Hawken, I see you.
But I think, like, I get where Joseph is. I mean, I think that's a good frame for, I mean, even if it's bullshit, like, okay, there's some truth there, like, mm-hmm. whether it's actually what he thinks, it is, like, accurate that Jack is not going to feel like himself around him, given where they left things last season.
I think this was also a good, like, to have it sort of be this halting process for Angry McPhee is smart, because to have him and Grams kind of do these face turns this quickly at the same time.
Right.
Is not really credible. And so, but I mean, I don't know. You can tell that the actor really wants to, like, just move this along so that he is the good guy again.
Yes. Yes.
Like he was perfectly cast for this and really seems to be able to get at that, like, speechless, I don't know what is I can say to fix this, but if I knew, I would say it.
Yeah.
Place. I don't know. He's good.
Yeah, I agree. Back at school, we rejoin Dawson, who has just determined that Principal Green wants him to produce propaganda on behalf of the football team, or at least that's how Dawson puts it. I think when there isn't a political element, it's just marketing, but I suppose football is political. Principal Green knows what the reality is. Dawson's film should emphasize what could be. And I guess Dawson is pretty confident that being a teacher's kid means he won't get in trouble, because he calls this the Leni Riefenstahl approach and says the Nazis did it too. And Principal Green winces, and so do we all, because Jesus Christ, dude.
Yeah, no.
Ugh.
No.
Principal Green sighs and then cites the example of Frank Capra making recruitment films during World War II. If this were happening now, Principal Green could say Steven Spielberg did this when he was in high school, or so the Fabelmans would have us believe, which is, by the way, a movie we could do for the bonus, I realized as putting that in my notes. But Dawson is soon distracted by Eve walking by the window. And if we had a problem with Joey's outfit in the last episode, she's in a crop top and, like, the shortest skirt. Like, does the school have a dress code at all? Like, literally at all?
Yeah. And just no, like, there's no visible structural undercarriage.
Oh, no.
At all. I mean, and her body is banging. I'm not going to act like she looks bad.
No.
She just looks casual, like, real casual.
She's got three belly chains on. Like, it's school. Yeah. You're not in the Pussycat Dolls. Like,
no, you're not.
This is not what you need to be wearing if you're doing experiments in your bio class that we heard earlier.
Yeah, oh God, can you imagine?
Anyway.
Getting that frog juice in your belly button. Girl, come on.
So Dawson cuts Principal Green off to say he'll do it and goes to chase Eve. And when he catches up to her, he claims this is the last time he's going to chase her. After his year chasing Joey, he's learned it's a bad habit. Eve lectures that Dawson is one of those guys who spends the rest of their lives comparing every relationship they have to the first one. Dawson does a bad job denying it, and there's some more tiresome back and forth before Eve orders Dawson to say straight out that he's over Joey. He says he is, but she doesn't believe him. He doesn't know why she asked then, and she says it was to see if he would lie to her, which he did, and she likes it, and this fucking cartoon, clip 11.
You like dishonesty. What else turns you on? Greed and corruption?
Sex. Sex turns me on to Dawson.
It tends to do that to people.
And no. You would know.
No.
How?
I will choose to ignore that slight.
Maybe it wasn't a slight. Maybe it was an invitation.
What are you suggesting?
Only the obvious. A night of scorching hot, unbridled, mind-altering sex.
Him?
Just like that? I mean, our first date and a month of getting to know each other?
Those are small town rituals for small town girls. Let's face it, Dawson, we're hot for each other. Be a lot of fun. Who knows? Maybe it'll even help you get over that certain brunette.
You're on.
Good. Now I'll take care of the time and place. You just take care of being prepared.
How do I find you in the meantime?
You don't find me, Dawson. I find you.
Don't find her. Don't find him.
Don't
Stay
find
away.
Him.
Both of you.
My God. Fucking. Yeah. Find a well and jump in it. Like, I just, again, don't understand anything about this character's inception or what they thought they were doing with the storyline. It is exhausting.
Yeah. But it's also like, well, what else turns you on? Sex. It's like, okay, yes, that's an A to A connection you're making.
Yeah, no.
Like, it's like the moment in American Beauty where we find out that when the girl that the Kevin Spacey character has been pining for, the Mina Suvari, like, he finally is like, okay, fine, my marriage has ended. I will have sex with this teenager. And then she's like, oops, I'm a virgin. Like, okay, that's what this girl sounds like the more she talks about sex. It's just all so obvious.
Well, and it's kind of in line with the I can be sexual. Like,
yes.
These words don't mean what you think they mean. Like, what turns you on is not, like, maybe sex does turn you on, but like the turn on leads to the sex.
Right. Yes.
So who's a lack of experience now? Like,
yes.
Oh, God.
Stop trying so hard.
Ugh.
Just stop trying. Just stop.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Sometime later, we get to see how cheerful the cheerleaders are under Jen's leadership. Clip 12.
1, 2, 3, 4. We don't care if we don't score. 5, 6, 7, 8. A few points would be really great. That's all right. That's okay. You're going to work for us someday.
What do you think?
Jen, this is for a pep rally. I mean, don't you think they should be slightly more...
peppy?
No, optimistic.
No, Jack, I've tried. Believe me, I've tried. Think I want to be held responsible for killing off the last vestiges of Capeside school spirit? But ever since they elected me leader of their little junta, all they want to do are these nasty, sardonic, self-aware cheers. Worse, they've even started to dress like me. It's like they're genetically predisposed to having absolutely no identity.
Yeah, well, it's the blonde gene.
Not funny.
Again, the even easier thing than being a cheerleader who's over it is doing something else with your time.
Mm-hmm. It's also not what junta means. So no. Maybe making sure that all the dictionaries in the Cape Side High Library are present and accounted for is a place to start.
La, 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 la. Yeah. At the end of this exchange, Jen warns Jack to look out for a ball flying at his face, literally. Jack effortlessly catches it and throws it back. Cut to the field where a player we will soon learn is named Henry Parker, played by the aforementioned Michael Pitt, is begging Coach L to put him in because they are killing us out there. And Mitch grabs Henry by the face to remind him that they are running plays against themselves and this is just a practice. And I feel like someone should have pulled back on that choice because it's weirdly intimate the way he holds Henry's head like that.
Yeah, if you've watched enough Beverly Hills 90210, you know that that grip usually means that Brandon Walsh's jaw is about to unhinge and eat.
Yeah.
His girlfriend's face. Mm. So, yeah, little dicey, that blocking.
Back to Jen and Jack, briefly discussing Jack's living arrangements before another errant ball comes at them and Jack sends it back again. Jack crabs that his father doesn't want Jack to live with him. Jen can relate. Jack mopes that at least Jen has Grams, and Jen says he does too, which is sweet. Back on the field, Henry is still hectoring Mitch so that Mitch can exposit back that Henry is a second-string freshman who is lucky he's not on JV. Henry's only going to play if the guy he's understudying, I know that's not the word, but I don't know what the word is, and I don't care, gets injured. And when Henry's like, what if he just sucks? Mitch orders him to run four laps, but first Henry needs to look at the sidelines, apparently for the first time, and notice Jack's skills. And when Mitch follows his gaze, it's just in time to see Jack catching a ball for the third time. Over to the drugstore, where Dawson's wasting everybody's time. Whoa. Clip 13.
God!
Power Bars, Advil, Polaroid Film, Lifesaver. What else? What am I forgetting? Oh, the, condoms.
What was that?
The condoms. Pack of, condoms.
You gotta speak up, son.
Condoms.
We don't keep them behind the counter anymore. Condoms, aisle 6.
So, you can
good
see.
Good for you.
Yes.
Like, if we're still doing this stupid, unfunny scene in 1999, for God's crispy sake, like, spread some mustard on those condoms. Why not? But this is not over.
Sadly, it's not. But the extra behind Vanderbeek, like, clearly doesn't know which shots they were going to use because she is elaborately rolling her eyes in all of them. Every time they cut to Dawson's single, she's behind him, like, just really hamming it up, as you can see the visual aids.
Been there.
Seriously. Smash cut to the enormous pegboard of condoms that we already saw last season when Andy and Pacey were shopping for them. Dawson says this is worse than breakfast cereals. Very sexy. Dawson glances back before choosing, and some weird middle-aged man decides to get involved, asking if Dawson has a big night or if he's just stocking up. Dawson says a little of both, and the stranger continues being a creep. Clip 14.
Your prophylactic purchasing has never been more difficult. You know, used to be. They just had two kinds, regular and, for those of us who needed them, the Magnum.
Huh.
Yeah. These days, you got your ribbed, your non-ribbed, your lubricated, your non-lubricated, your thin, your ultra-thin, sheepskin, extra sensitive, minoxidil 9, and glow in the dark.
Glow in the darks don't work.
No kidding.
Now you gotta hold them up to the light for 20 minutes. Who's got time for that?
And if you really want to blow our mind, try the Brown Betty.
Ew! Don't say Brown Betty in a sex context. That just makes me think of butts.
Also, sheepskin is something different. Lamb skin. Sheepskin. Oh, that seems like a trip to the emergency room.
I'm upset.
Yeah, not happy.
Later. Henry runs up and checks that this is his chance to go in order to make sure Henry really impresses Mitch with his one shot. He wants to call in a ringer, but Mitch says there's no one left. Cut to the huddle where Henry's issuing instructions and the camera pans around to show Jack there, uncomfortably hovering on the edge. Football, football, football. Henry throws. Jack catches and runs. The montage montages so that even a moron like me can tell Henry and Jack are good at this together. Even Jen cheers. Mitch is impressed. And the next day, he calls Jack to the field to ask him to join the team. When Jack declines and Mitch insists, Jack is like, I don't want to be the gay kid on the football team getting ridiculed. Mitch states that one thing has nothing to do with the other, but Jack says, that's only in a perfect world. Mitch tries to say he's also an underdog. No one else wanted to coach a team this shitty, but with Jack, he thinks they could actually win, and he needs that right now, and he thinks Jack might need it too. At the Leary house, Jen finds Dawson loading up an SUV that better not be the one he was supposed to have been gifted for his birthday. His drugstore bag falls off the top of the stuff he's putting in. Jen rudely peeks and asks about the condoms and whom he plans to use them with, but he declines to answer, and they go on. Clip 15.
Ever since Philly, somebody's been whistling a very different tune.
Okay, I had to go to Hulu because I thought she said Billy, as in her ex. I was like, what? But she says, ever since.
Ooh.
Thank you, Hulu, yeah, for the captions. That's ever since Philly.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Dawson says he's remaking himself for the new millennium and is no longer afraid of a good time. And Jen and her now rained on looking hair have a question. Clip 16.
Are you ready for this good time? And I don't mean in a Trojan kind of way.
How do you mean?
Sex isn't a one-way street, Dawson. There's going to be expectations where you're concerned.
Okay, any hot tips?
I thought that you'd never ask. All right. It's all about one word, Dawson. Pacing. Now, virgins either go too slow or too fast. Now, which do you think you are?
How would I know?
Let's say that you have an ice cream sundae right in front of you, but no spoon. Now, it's 100 degrees out and you're starving. Do you lick the ice cream or do you bite right in?
Bite right in.
Too fast. See, first you need to admire the sundae. Watch the sundae. And then just before it's about to drip, you gently let your lips lick around the exterior, savoring every inch. You want to make that sundae last a long time. But not too long, because otherwise it ends up all over the table instead of in your mouth. But Dawson, if you remember one thing, let it be this. If you don't get the whipped cream all over your face, you're not doing it right.
The show is making me sex negative. Like, I fucking hate this. I'm so mad.
God damn it, Dave. You know, this is making me life negative. Like, the minute she started in on the ice cream sundae, I was like, oh, I remember this shit. What a nightmare.
Yeah.
She does a great job getting through this, once again, utterly misbegotten symbology system. That's like, just say ice cream cone. Like, why does it have to be a whole sundae? Why is there a table involved?
Yes. What does she mean by watch sundae?
No.
Oh.
I know. And then it's like, okay. And like, if you have a speech about this and the word pacing is in it, make sure the actor doesn't swallow it so it doesn't sound like she's saying, I've got one word for you, pacey. Like, yeah, you know what? That's the best fucking advice anybody's given that guy all day. Just tap out and let Joshua Jackson take over. So we actually believe that this is like a, you know, fuckable problem. I hate all of this so much. Please let it end. Let's move on.
Okay. Smash cut to the pep rally where the camera pans across a banner that reads, hope you score this year, in case we did not get it. In the middle of the cheerleading squad, Jen in Daria boots and Riot Girl ripped fishnets half-assedly steps back and forth as she uncheers. Clip 17.
No, but I've been told.
I don't know, but I've been told.
Cape Side Minutemen break the mold.
Cape Side Minutemen break the mold.
We've got style, we've got class.
We've got style, we've got class.
So what if those other guys kick our ass?
So what if those other guys kick our ass?
Go Cape Side. Go Cape Side.
What are we doing here? Nobody cares.
Right.
Do something else.
Yes.
Yearbook. Start one.
Principal Green takes the mic to give that the thanks it deserves, then introduces Mitch. They need to stop showing the extras who are quite obviously in their 30s, by the way, because there's some real, real senior citizens in the crowd this time.
And in the band, not for
that
nothing.
Too, as Mitch calls out a couple of players we don't know to break through paper banners, Joey enters with Andy and Pacey. Pacey is walking behind Andy with both hands on her shoulders. Like, if you're already noticing she's trying to avoid you, maybe don't physically crowd her so much. The player intros continue as these three sit. This is when we see Andy has redone her hair from earlier into high pigtails, which, no. It's a big, big, big no.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Cindy Brady, and it's not counteracting what the ostensible problem is at all. In fact, doing the opposite. Like I said, Baby Jane shit. Don't do that.
Oh, yes. Pacey and Joey immediately decide they've seen enough, but Andy makes them stay, and it's a good thing, because that's when Mitch introduces Jack as the team's new wide receiver. No comment, and the crowd goes wild, and Jack smiles shyly as his friends and sister wonder when this even happened. Andy also didn't know Jen was a cheerleader and jokes that while she got sane, everyone else went crazy. Again, guys, taste line.
Phrasing.
Back to the stage where Mitch announces a first in Cape Side history. Why would anyone have kept track of this? Truly, who cares? But their starting quarterback will be a freshman, Henry Parker. Henry trips, running up on the stage, falling at Jen's feet for a meet cute. He stammers an apology, then goes to take his place, panicking and picking up one of her pom-poms on his way. And amid the sparklers and streamers, Pacey resumes trying to get cozy with Andy. She kind of shrugs him off, and clip 18.
Risky much?
Well, listening to you, Holly, really does bad things to me. What do you say we scramble, huh?
In a little bit.
Come on, V.
I said in a little while. What are you doing?
I want to talk to you, and I'd really rather not do it in front of the whole school.
Okay.
Rough. Back to Mitch, introducing Dawson's film. Somehow in the past day, of which he spent probably an hour condom shopping, Dawson got access to old stock footage that he has cut together for this. Black and white clips of the guy taking a cannonball to the stomach, circus performers getting spun around on each other's legs, and that kind of thing are what is playing as we hear clip 19.
Valor. Agility. Determination. Strength. Cape Side, we have one word that means all of us.
The time has come, the walrus said.
You don't mean now.
I picked the time and place, remember?
But here, right now, I mean, my video's playing.
Which is like the lamest of lamest excuses.
Good point.
Dawson, let's go.
They say that girls like you don't exist.
They lie.
No, they don't.
No, they don't. They're absolutely right. And if you try to conjure one, this is what happens. Try hard and annoying.
No, they're being very honest. Dawson grabs the drugstore bag as Eve yanks him away. And having a much less sexy time are Andy and Pacey as he confronts her about not wanting to spend time with him and asks if she wants to break up. That's the last thing she wants, she says. And when he insists that they talk about it, she makes him promise not to interrupt her. And clip 20.
When I went to Mayfield to get better, I wasn't myself anymore. I wasn't the same person who came to Cape Side. I wasn't the girl you fell in love with. My first week, I met Mark, and he had been through everything I had been through and more. In and out of facilities like 3 times, on and off medication since he was 9. I didn't write to you about him because I didn't want you to get jealous. We were just friends. You know, we'd spend our free time together, just talking endlessly, mostly about our fears. I was so afraid, Pacey. Afraid of everything. I was scared that they were never going to let me out of there, or that whatever was broken inside me wouldn't be fixable. And Mark, he understood these things like nobody else could because they were his fears, too. He even had a girlfriend that he was anxious to get back to.
You slept with him?
I don't know how he got that from what she said, but yes, she did. So.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you didn't get that from how they were sitting on the bed together when you walked in unannounced, but as long as you finally got here.
Right. I mean, I think he did suspect it immediately, but she was just, you know, deflecting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's clear. I mean, I didn't even remember that they had slept together. I just thought they were, like, flirting or fooling around, but whatever.
Right.
Anyway, they go on. Clip 21.
We decided just to continue to be friends and not tell our significant others, but then when I saw you, Hazy, it was the biggest mistake of my life. And all I keep thinking about right now is, what if you can't forgive me? I mean, Hazy, you have to forgive me, please. You have to forgive me.
I don't know.
Does he?
So he stalks out, and that's where they leave it for now. Back to the gym, and if you assumed Dawson's opening for this film was ironic and it was going to turn out to be a subversive Minutemen takedown in the style of Jen, it's not. It's just Dawson droning over footage of football, something we were given to understand back in season one he neither cared or possibly knew anything about. But anyway, as the pep ralliers watch the film, Dawson and Eve make out behind the screen. Dawson sits on a control panel and the screen starts to go up, but then he hits it again and it goes back down. Joey and Principal Green both notice. Dawson then hears a click and asks if Eve heard it, but she is laser focused on fucking right now. And sure enough, Dawson's butt activates the screen again, and when it rises all the way, the whole school sees them and has already started applauding when Eve pointlessly tells Dawson not to turn around, but then reveals him. And this gets them a standing ovation from everyone except Mitch and Principal Green, although the principal does look amused, and that's in line with his whole do dumb kid shit speech. So good. Dawson decides to lean in, bowing and acknowledging Eve, who curtsies, and even Mitch cracks up, which he might not if he knew her part in the accident with the boat. I'll say that. And Eve slips off stage, and Dawson's obnoxiously lapping it up when he suddenly notices Joey in the crowd, disgusted. After a commercial, Dawson's sitting alone in the pep rally mess when Eve returns and asks if he is ready. Dawson's going to go home with Mitch. Part of him really wants to hang out with Eve, and I think we know which part. He once again remembers that he should be concerned that he doesn't know anything about her, including her last name. Clip 22.
All you are to me is sex, and if I slept with you, that would be the reason.
We all have a reason for sleeping with someone, Dawson. Whether it's their body or their personality, their money or their sense of humor. What's the difference?
I guess the difference is the first time I sleep with someone, I don't want it to be for just any reason. I want it to be for every reason.
Your eyes.
What about them?
That was my reason. When I first met you, I looked into your eyes, and I saw such an old soul.
Thank you, Eve.
Whitman. Thank you, Eve Whitman.
He does have nice eyes. I'll give them that.
Yeah, that's true.
As for everything else, like, just please, just fuck so you can stop talking about it. Like, I'm begging now.
Yeah, and believe me, once you've done it once, the whole, I want it to be for every reason, like, you actually don't. Just... just throw it overboard, boyo, safely, but, you know, come on, take it easy.
Dawson wonders if Eve would consider giving her a phone number, but he's going to have to earn that the hard way, unlike the full sex she keeps telling him she is offering for, I guess, one reason, his eyes showing he's an old soul.
What? What other way? Does he have to wash her car? What is...
He has to answer her these riddles three. I don't know.
I wish for a billion more wishes. Just shut up and fuck, both of you.
So Pacey drops Joey at her house, both of them agreeing that pep rallies are probably off the table from now on. She's about to get out when she notices him moping. She would also be justified in moping given the display that we just saw, but I guess only one of them is allowed to feel bad at a time. And it's his turn. Clip 23.
Pacey, you probably don't want to hear this right now, and I'm sure you don't want to hear it from me, but you have to talk to her.
No, not right now. I couldn't even look at her right now.
You have to, Pacey. You have to hear her out.
Why? What's the difference, Joey? Huh? No matter what she says, the ending's still the same. She slept with somebody else.
You think that just because the two of you were together, what she did to you hurts more? It doesn't. There's no difference, Pacey. I mean, look, she's 16 years old, and so are you. We talk like we know what's going on, but we don't. We don't have any idea. Look, we're really young, and we're going to screw up a lot. You know, we're going to keep changing our minds, and sometimes even our hearts. And through all of that, the only real thing we can offer each other is forgiveness. And I couldn't do that. Or at least I did it too late. Don't let yourself get so angry that you stop loving, because one day you'll wake up from that anger and the person you love will be gone.
Are you still that sad about
it? No 16-year-olds talk, but
right.
Nice performance from Katie Holmes.
I agree. Also, the person she loves sucks. Like, she just, you know, witnessed something very embarrassing. Like, anyway. Pacey looks absolutely devastated, and Joey decides to leave him with that for the night. Back in the hall at school, Jen is complaining about her itchy fishnets as if someone told her to wear them when Jack runs into Joseph. Graham's told him to come to the pep rally, but not why. And another example of David Dukes' very good performance here. He, like, tentatively tries to clap Jack on the arm before sort of scaring himself and then just verbally congratulating him. I thought that was nice.
Yeah.
Seeing Jack in his jersey made Joseph realize he was wrong about them living together again. There aren't as many differences between them as he had thought. Jack crabs that it shouldn't take a football jersey for Joseph to realize that, which, like, maybe not, but he got there. Like, he's, you know, he's trying. I think they're doing a good job showing the stages of him, like, figuring this out.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's not too, like, whatever, Davy and Goliath, that he's not like, okay, hugs all around. Like, if I recall correctly, once they do finally get there, it's, like, super satisfying. So, yeah. But, I mean, this read much more normal, like everybody just, like, really not knowing how to be and trying. So, yeah.
Right. But also, like, grasping at anything where he's like, oh, he's still a boy in the ways I know boys to be, you know, like, maybe he's not as much of an alien as I thought he was when he came out.
Right.
He's still doing straight things. He's okay. He's not a drag queen or whatever.
Jesus.
Whatever his fears are.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, angry.
So Joseph agrees and formally says he would like Jack to come home. Jack declines. Joseph thought he would say that, but needed to ask. And very maturely, Jack thanks him and Joseph shuffles off. But when he's at the door, Jack calls to him to ask again sometime. Not bad. Good job, everybody.
Yeah. That was good.
Mm-hmm.
Sniff.
So Pacey finds Andy at their spot at the waterfront. She was hoping that he would. He admits he told himself not to come, but he owes her that much. She doesn't know what she can say other than that she is sorry. He doesn't think that she ever realized how powerful their relationship was. She was the person who made him want to be the best version of himself. And when she started getting sick, he realized he might not be that person for her. He can never love her the way he used to, knowing that his love wasn't strong enough the first time. And he can forgive her, but he will never forget. And as he gets up, she takes his hand, sniffling that she still loves him, and he gently takes her wrist so that she will let go and says goodbye, and she cries as she watches him go. And that was a rough one, but very well performed, especially
by
him.
I didn't remember it being that, just sort of like she comes back and then it just, everybody goes over the side with this one emotionally, like, oof.
Yeah. I imagine that was a rough one for Meredith Monroe to get that script and then call her agent and be like, they just put me in the credits. Like, are they getting rid of me? This is,
I know,
so
what
fast.
Is, what are we doing?
Yeah. They're not, by the way. She continues to be in the show. When the Learys get home, Mitch sees before Dawson that Joey's sitting on their dock. Dawson, his huge pants and his three sizes too big work boots roll up to ask her what's up. She's not sure why she's there, except that his house is like magnetic north, and some nights it draws her to it. Dawson states that they can't go back. She knows, but earlier, and he interrupts to say he's sorry that she had to see that, but she tells him not to be. She thinks that she was meant to. It made her feel how wrong it would be to get back together. Yes, hold on to that feeling.
Please.
Needing to move on and have other relationships with other people, not him. He says it's weird when you still love someone but stop needing them like you used to. She agrees, but says it's weird and kind of sad, and then goes on with a moment made for future previouslys. Clip 24.
So we're friends, and then we're a couple. And we're friends again, and we're a couple. So what do we know?
We're Dawson and Joey.
Okay.
Cool.
He then takes off the stupid necklace that he's been wearing at least since season two, the like black pearl or something pendant, and puts it on her. And she asks if he thinks every Joey has a Dawson and vice versa. And he hopes so for their sake. And I'm not sure I do, but that's where we leave things for today.
Ugh, and thank God.
Let's close things up by naming our episode MVP. I'm tempted to say Joseph because I really am impressed with how far he's come. But instead, I'm going to say Grams for very quietly, like trying to push people together who might need her help and wouldn't have as easy a time getting there without it.
Yeah, I'm going to say Jack, actually. Angry was in the conversation for me, but I think Jack stood his ground, but also realized like everybody has to take little steps back towards each other for this to work. And given how just estranged from just sort of this galaxy quest level of like in examining the historical documents about teenagers, like what are you doing?
Yeah.
But then over in this storyline, it's like actually very, it feels very organic and is well done. So
yeah,
I'll take it.
Least valuable player. I mean, for me, you can just assume I truly feel it's Eve for every episode that Eve is in, and maybe some in the future that she's not. But just in the interest of mixing things up, I'm going to say the cheerleaders who have so little imagination that they're still doing this, even though obviously no one is into it, including their captain.
I mean, I would like to say Andy, but I feel like things happen. You know, what happens at the residential facility is supposed to stay at the residential facility. She could have just tried to be cool and not mention it.
Yeah.
And it, I mean, it seems a little uncharitable to give it to her. So I'm going to say Brown Betty Lady. Guys, that's a minor. Eyes on your own paper bag. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Next time on Again With This, Joey's boss is gross. Jack's teammates are also gross, but in a bullying kind of way. And everyone's tempted to cheat on their PSATs. Do you want to test how high your gorge will go? Check out our visual aids. You'll find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. That is also where you'll find a complete archive of recap episodes, againwiththispodcast.com/subscribe. And it's where you can join the Again With This Club for extra episodes and access to our Discord. All of that at, sing it if you know the words, againwiththispodcast.com/club. I'm Strip Joint HR VP Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Up Close Senior Girl Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer David T. Cole has to forgive you. Talk to you next time.
Ooh, what?
Getting that frog juice in your belly button, girl? Come on.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.